Taking a look now at science, research, science education with Bassam Shakashiri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry, William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin Idea, and Director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. And certainly if you have a question as we talk science research and science education, I hope you'll join us. The number 1-800-642-1234. And you can also email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Bassam, welcome back.
Happy to be here, Larry.
And here we are this year, the 40th anniversary of Once Upon a Christmas Cheery in the lab of Shakashiri. 40 years.
40 years. Can you believe that? 40 years. I'm so proud of this milestone. And we are having a special program the first weekend in December, December 5th and December 6th. We're having four presentations on Saturday afternoon and Sunday afternoon. A lot of the tickets have been committed, but there's some left. Okay. And if our people in the listening audience who would like to get a ticket, I invite them to go to my website, scifun.org, scifun.org, and then click on Christmas Lecture. And then that takes you to a place where you can print the form and send in requests for tickets. We have some tickets left. We haven't really announced this too widely this year because we knew that there'll be people interested in it. It's called the Christmas Lecture. It's in the tradition of the great British scientist Michael Faraday, who used to gather young people and their families around Christmas time at the Royal Institution in London and do science experiments. And I learned about this tradition when I was teaching at the University of Illinois before I came to Madison in 1970. And I said, I'm going to do a Christmas lecture for my students. And word got out, and now it's all over the place. Wisconsin Public Television will be videotaping this. Then they will telecast it during Christmas week. And also PBS and cable stations across the country will be doing that. But I am especially pleased that I am doing the 40th anniversary program, and it gives me time to reflect and think back about the great interactions I've had in this wonderful community that we belong to here. This Christmas lecture is my holiday gift to our community. So if you'd like a ticket and we can help you, please let us know. They're free. We issue tickets to control the size of the crowd. We don't want people to show up and then get a seat. We do it four times. Please go to my website, scifun.org, and click away and send in your request as soon as possible.
And I can attest to the fact that it is a lot of fun, exciting, entertaining, and educational as well. It's really a great time. Well, that's 40 years.
Larry, may I just, you know, anniversaries are, as I said, a time to reflect.
Yeah.
And I just, and as I mentioned, it is really a great privilege for me to be in this community and to be doing what I do here. Last week, one of my colleagues, longtime colleagues, passed away. He was very heavily involved in the Christmas lecture. And I'd just like to pay public tribute to him. That's Dr. Glenn Dereen. He passed away last week at age 75, and I'm going to dedicate what I do to his memory. So that's an important part for me to include in what I'm doing. Yes.
Well, President Obama came to Wisconsin in Madison yesterday, spoke at a charter school, Wright Middle School. As an educator, what's your take on his message?
It is remarkable that the president came to Madison, and he is to be highly commended for the outstanding leadership role that he is exercising by urging us all to pay special attention to school reform. In fact, he's putting his money where his mouth is by providing a significant amount of funding, part of the stimulus package that was announced earlier this year, to transform schools. His message yesterday included four major points. In addition to talking to the students one-on-one and visiting with them and inspiring them and allowing them to ask hard questions, we don't know what questions they asked because the press wasn't there. But the four major points that he mentioned that are necessary to turn around our national schools. The first one is to transform the lowest performing schools. Now, in Wisconsin, we're fortunate. We have many pockets of excellence in terms of the schools that we have. But we also have serious problems in a variety of settings. Milwaukee Public System, to mention one. And there's some rural schools that need some attention. So his first point is to try to transform the lowest performing schools. The second point, which is really important, is to use timely information to improve the way we teach in the schools. Research now informs us in more positive ways than ever about what we can do in the classroom to enhance the quality of learning. And I think he's right on target by saying that this is an important point. The third point is one that deals with having outstanding teachers and principals. He's paying attention not only to the teacher in the classroom. The teacher is the central figure in the classroom, but the classroom is part of an environment, and administrative support and leadership from principals is important. So he says outstanding teachers and principals in our classroom and our schools must get the support they need, and this support must come from the local community, in addition to the federal funding that's being offered. And then the fourth point, he says, we must have higher standards and better assessment so that we can prepare our kids for what they do after the classroom. And some of these, all four points I agree with. In Wisconsin, the legislature now is considering a bill to take away the provision that says teacher performance is related to student performance. I'm in support of deleting that. I think teachers are highly, highly valued. But their salaries and their the ways in which we recognize them is not necessarily measured by the grades that the students get. This is to avoid having us teach to the test, so to speak. Now, Larry, testing is very important. It gives us telltales of progress that students are making. But grades aren't everything. The learning environment that we put our students in, we put our teachers in, we put ourselves in, is very, very important. And so I appreciate President Obama's visit to Madison and calling attention to the dire need to improve the low-performing schools across the country. And I am hopeful that we can all rise to this call on his part. You know, he's doing about all he can do. Yeah. Reform has to be done by us. It has to be done by interactions between the school system, colleges and universities, the business community, other parts of the community. All of us have a high stake in this enterprise. And as we know, and we've said many times before, education is key to success. Education is key to success. Ignorance is our worst enemy, and we combat ignorance by high-quality education, by assuring that we have high-quality offerings in our schools, that the facilities are appropriate for education in the 21st century. And so I'm greatly encouraged by the visit that President Obama has made to Madison, and I hope it'll spur us all in Madison and elsewhere to do more than what we are doing now.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today. If you'd like to chime in with a question or comment, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Bassam, the National Science Foundation has released a report that says the federal government remains the largest source of academic research and development. However, its share is dropping. How much money does UW-Madison, for example, receive for its academic research and development? And it does rank pretty high in the country.
We are the highest ranking public institution in terms of federal funds that come to support our research and educational activities. That's a great tribute to our faculty, staff, administrators. It's also a great tribute to the students because we attract good students. And so the NSF data clearly show that The role of the federal government is to induce and to support advances in science and engineering and mathematics and in education. But the rest of society has to contribute as well. And so private foundations, industry, many community foundations are contributing. And it's very important that we sustain the support for education, not only higher education, but education at all levels. And that's what NSF does. NSF provides funds for research by graduate students, by postdoctoral fellows, by faculty, but also provides funding for teacher preparation programs, for programs at the elementary school level. And that's essential that we try to sustain this level of support that's that comes from the federal government through NSF. There are other agencies, Larry, that also do similar things. But NSF, as you say, is the largest provider of federal funds for academic institutions. And it's not an accident that Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, is up there. This is, as I say, a tribute to the quality of research and education that we have in Madison. And not that we do everything perfectly, Larry, but it is really a good indicator of the quality of people that we have here and hopefully the quality of the results of the research that come out.
Absolutely. Let's take some calls and see what's on people's minds. The number again, 1-800-642-1234, if you'd like to join in. Michael in La Crosse online now. Michael, hi. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you. I hear, and I've been listening to in recent days on NPR, and I enjoy the discussion that you're having on educational reform. I hear only limited discussion on year-round schools. And I think if you talk to any teacher, you will find out that there is probably a gap of anywhere from 4 to 5 months in a school in our current how school's year is designed, where there isn't any learning going on. Although there are some students that go to summer school, because most of classrooms start to generally shut down mid-May. The teachers are beginning to put books on the shelves. And then we come back in, late August. And then most of September is trying to get the kids, gearing the kids back up to where they were back in May. I'm of the belief that we ought to have, for that reason, year-round schools, but also when you look at what costs can we control and what ones we can control, more school districts are looking at energy costs. And why are we having children, why are schools open during the coldest months of the year and we're wasting energy and at this time in, say, February and January, and then where times where we ought to maybe have students in school where it's maybe a little bit more comfortable.
All right. Thanks for those comments.
You make a lot of good points, Michael. I like the tone of what you're saying. Do you, are you still on the line?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Michael, do you know why we have school for only 180 days a year?
I really don't. It's probably something controlled either. Probably a vestige of an agrarian economy.
It is. It was designed for good reasons back then. And so we should examine what the formal classroom instructional programs are. Learning takes place everywhere, not just in the classroom, outside the classroom. But in the classroom, we learn how to learn. Mm-hmm. We acquire the discipline of studying, of being critical, of analyzing information, of enjoying what we experience. So I agree with you that we should carefully look at the whole question of the length of the school year, We should also take into consideration the factors that you mentioned, the economic considerations, the contracts with the teachers' unions, and so on. And this is an important societal issue. There's nothing really magical about 180 days, especially now that we live in a different environment altogether, different society altogether. The same thing applies at the collegiate level. You know, we have two academic semesters, or some institutions have the quarter system. Having said all that, I also think we should include in our thinking the value of having a break from classroom instruction, where we can acquire a different experience through travel, visiting national parks, through getting a job. So it is, as you say, Michael, an important question to think about, and I think in Wisconsin we should think about it even more seriously than we have.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, there's, 260 weekdays in a year, and we're at 180, so what's that, 90?
Yeah.
Days of not having school.
Not having formal instruction in a classroom setting. Most people learn most of what they learn in life outside the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
But the classroom activities and what takes place in the classroom and surrounding a classroom is essential to help us acquire good learning skills, and also to learn about things that we would not necessarily learn about ourselves. So we get exposed to a lot of different ideas. Some of them are controversial ideas. We even learn what the word controversy means. So I think it's important to be focused on the formal classroom activities, but also to consider the context in which they take place and look at informal classroom settings as well.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today. Jim Packard, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Independent filmmaking and community action come together this Friday at Tales for Planet Earth. It's a free weekend-long festival of nearly 50 environmental films opening this weekend in Madison. I'm Ann Strainchamps. Join me Friday at 9 on the Ideas Network as we talk about the power of film to make the world a better place.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Rockweiler Insulation, specializing in reducing energy costs by installing recycled and organic material insulation in homes throughout southern Wisconsin. On the web at rockweilerinsulation.com.
Talking science, education, and research today with Bassam Shakashiri, Larry Mueller here. Give us a call with your questions or comments at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Marilyn in Dubuque, Iowa next. Marilyn, hello. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I've often wondered why they don't, instead of trying new programs all the time, which have not proved to be terribly successful, that they don't look at the education that was provided in the 30s and the 40s when education was successful and we were at the top of the ladder worldwide. 48% of our tax dollar in Iowa goes for education, and I don't see raising money like that and spending money like that with no return is a good idea when we have had success before. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for that observation, Marilyn. I would say that the biggest factor that I think plays into what you're talking about is the attitude that we have, in society toward learning, and the expectations that we have, which are now different than they were before. I know if you're from Iowa, but let me give the example from Wisconsin. Wisconsin, if you look at the population of Wisconsin, and you look at the university that we have in Wisconsin, and then you also look at other universities around the country in states that have about the same population, and you see that Wisconsin has no business being as good as it is. So why is it that way? It's because of the attitude that people have. And the attitude is that learning is important. This is how we combat ignorance. This is how we improve our daily lives. This is how we improve and care for the environment that we belong to. And so it is very important to keep thinking about the attitude that we have and ask the same question that Marilyn is asking. Why do we provide support for education? What's the point of it? What's the point of it? Is the point to keep kids away from home for a certain number of hours every day? Or is there something else going on? So this is a very profound question, Marilyn, and I think all of us who work with school boards or with other groups in our society that care about the quality of education should ask that question. And I don't know whether the right number is 40% or 35% or 50%. That can be debated. It depends on the needs at the time. But you make a very good point about looking at the purposes for which we provide financial support to our educational systems. And I thank you for raising that point.
Derek and Butternut, it's on to you now. Hi, Derek.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Yes, sir. I just had a question. It seems that every time education is mentioned, we seem to discuss and fall back to the point where we require more financial resources for it, when it seems that the more money we apply to the problem, the worse the performance of the students get. And so I'm wondering if you guys in academia have thought about looking at how you actually teach our students and the methodologies there to teach them. I know that we've gone away from rote memorization and into free thinking during the classroom, but it just seems to not be functioning. Do you have
thoughts on that? Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Derek, for raising that. You're right. Performance is what it's all about. I don't mean by that performance on an examination. I'm talking about the performance of the individual and the individuals who go to school while they are in school and after school. So it's a long view in terms of how we assess and get some telltale, some indicators about the quality of the school. So, throwing money at the problem is not going to solve it. In fact, understanding what the problem is to begin with is very, very important. And to recognize that there is a shared responsibility for all of the educational programs that we have. It's not just the responsibility of the teacher in the classroom to do one thing by herself. It is a shared responsibility so that the student, the individual, is in an environment on a daily basis, in school, out of school. That's why I've been, I will continue to be a strong advocate of parental involvement in what goes on in any learning environment, whether it's a formal classroom or whether it's on a field trip where parents go along, or whether it's on a summer vacation trip to the Black Hills or to Yellowstone. Great learning experiences. So I agree with the point that Derek is raising. So now talking about what's in the classroom, yes, there's a lot of research that has been done that clearly shows that certain approaches and certain methodologies yield better learning than others. And those are the ones we should inform ourselves about. By ourselves, I mean those of us who are in education, so that we can adapt and maybe in some cases adopt some of them to improve the quality of instruction and consequently the quality of learning. So, yes, there is a lot of research, and I'm a strong believer that educational progress will be greatly influenced by the results of educational research that takes place at institutions of higher education and elsewhere.
Thanks again, Derek, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to turn to Bill in Delta next. Bill, hello to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a couple of comments that really may seem trivial in the greater scheme of things here. But my background is that I've been a teacher for over 15 years and an administrator for 15-plus years. A previous caller called in and mentioned something that I've heard several times, it seems, in the last couple of months, that in the spring, teachers shut down their classrooms in the middle of May, and nothing takes place for 3 or 4 weeks. My experience is that couldn't be further from the truth. I don't know of a lot of teachers who want to have 25 to 30 middle school kids in their classroom and not have anything for them to do that's considered constructive. Typically, teachers work until the last day of school with the kids, and most teachers probably feel that there's not enough time to get through the material that they need to get through. So the notion, once again, that teachers shut down their classrooms 3 to 4 weeks before the end of the school year is something that's out there, and I think it needs to be addressed as being an incorrect assumption. We live in a world where people seem to say whatever they want to say without any direct knowledge or empirical data with regard to what they say. And I think it's important for us who are in the field to say or to challenge that notion as being correct or incorrect. I don't know whether Dr. Shakashiri teaches a university classes, but I can't imagine, I've never had a university professor who was shut down class 3 or 4 weeks before the end of the term and did whatever.
Thank you, Bill, for making this observation and making this correction. Yes, indeed. This is how we educate each other first of all, let me say, I'm a strong advocate of free speech, and people should express themselves, but I agree with what Bill is saying, that there should be a basis for the expression, and it should be an informed expression, so we should be responsible in what we say. And there are misconceptions about what goes on in classrooms. Yes, Bill, I teach a large introductory chemistry course with 363 students this semester, and next semester probably the same size. And yes, in near the end of the semester, it's like a crescendo; it builds up. You know, if
it's really
hot
and heavy.
right. So, Bill, in your comments and in your plea for us to communicate with each other and others in society, you're exemplifying what all of us should be doing. And we're, of course, doing it on Larry's show here, so we want to thank Larry and the technology for being able to do it this way.
Yep, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for calling, Bill. And you can join in, too, with your questions. We have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Lori in Watertown next. Lori, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A previous caller mentioned that the school year should be changed for saving energy and things like that, and I just wanted to mention that there's also the option of online public charter schools, which my daughter just transferred into this year, and you don't have the brick-and-mortar cost, and we found it to be an effective learning style.
Can you say more about that, Lori?
She goes to IQ Academy. It's an online public charter school. We have school choice here in Wisconsin, and if you live way out in the middle of nowhere, the only charter school that you can really attend is online. And we found she's a junior in high school this year, and we found that it's a lot more like a real job, like in engineering, where you have projects, and it's fairly self-paced. She's learned a lot of skills she'd be using in the work field that she hasn't learned in the brick-and-mortar school because it's a little freer. It's more like reality where you have to get things done and you have deadlines and nobody is standing over you.
And I know about what you're describing. I just ask you the questions to kind of get your opinion about it. So does she interact? Does she do this on a routine basis? Does she...
She has classes. Each class is a little over an hour once a week. They're live classes. The software is amazing. It's actually like you're sitting in a classroom. You can talk back and forth. You can write on the board for everyone to see, to talk to the teacher. She's found that she gets more help and more individual attention when she needs it. And then during the week, she's able to email her teachers, and if need be, she can set a time and actually meet with a teacher in person if she has a question and she just can't get that covered during the regular time.
This sounds really good, and it as you describe it, is in keeping with what I know about that happens with online courses. I'm happy to see that technology is being used, in this case, to electronically connect us with each other. I just want to make a request of you to make sure that she interacts with you and with others.
Oh, actually, she's more connected now than she was in the brick and mortar school because she can work ahead, and she works very quickly. I don't think the online school is for everyone. But she's got more time to go out and volunteer in the community. She works for a dog trainer. She works for the Humane Society. She does a number of volunteer things, and so she gets to work with a wide variety of people of different age groups and, of course, the animals she loves.
Excellent. This is excellent. And I just want to say about electronic communications. They're very, very important and can be very helpful to us. But I don't think they should be a substitute for the personal interaction.
Right.
And that's the only comment I make about this, and I feel very strongly about this. So I can interact with my 363 students electronically via email, via the web, and so on. But it's the personal interaction where I can talk to them, and they can hear the inflection in my voice, just like you're hearing it right now, compared to just reading it online. And you did mention that they interact also. Sometimes there's a radio hookup, and there's voice connection, and so on. So
yeah, actually, they even have a visual connection, which she's she worries about in the morning when she's getting ready.
It sounds like you're having a success with this, and thank you for calling it to our attention.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. There are many ways to educate, that's for sure, and that's one of them. Susan and Brilliant, on to you. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, as I was listening, my thoughts went to when I was raising my children. A lot of times I just didn't know how to be helpful to them when they were doing homework, and so I'm just wondering if there's any merit to the thought of interacting more with the parents, having a monthly class meeting where the parents can come and hear what the lessons are going to be, hear how important education is and how they can be helpful at home. You know, I just don't think we calculate the parent into the educational equation enough and actually partner with parent educational experience, you know, continues at home.
I agree with you, Susan.
What you thought about that.
I agree with you, and so I have a question for you.
Yes.
Are you saying what you just said to people in the school and to the teachers and to the administrators?
Yeah.
I actually just thought of it as I was listening to your program.
Yeah. So again, I'm asking you rhetorical, suggestive questions. Are you saying this to your neighbors so that you can go?
Well, I should start doing that. I haven't done that.
Now see, this is we have to think about steps that we want to take as individuals, as parents, as teachers, as responsible citizens in our community. We have to think about them, organize ourselves, and interact with the existing structure, which is, you know, the school system. And you make excellent points about the role of parents and how parents can be coached or aided to help with the learning that takes place at home, outside the classroom. So I encourage you in the strongest possible way I know to talk this up some more, just like you did here. You took the first step. You're talking about it publicly. This is just great.
Well, I will do that.
All right. I thank you very much for calling. It's a good suggestion. Lots of good ideas floating out here today. We have more callers. Laura in Green Bay, we turn to you next. Hi, Laura.
We have more.
Laura, are you there? No, I think we must have lost her there. Well, let's try Peter in Stoughton. Peter, hello to you.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm losing hope, and I'm wondering if Dr. Sam could provide me with some. 2 or 3 weeks ago, the results of some poll from a reliable organization were released that said the number of Americans who thought global warming was a real issue was diminishing quite substantially year after year. And I hear things like this. I hear things like, well, the number of Americans who know that it takes a year for the Earth to rotate the sun is also dropping year after year. I guess I need some idea that there is some hope and some reason to believe that science education and education in general is going to get us, keep us moving forward.
Yeah,
Peter. Right. Peter, do not despair. You're again taking a necessary step here in expressing a concern. Do not lose hope. If we don't have hope, then it's all over.
Yeah.
It's not an exaggeration what I just said. So we have to really think about what these pieces of data that you're sharing with us tell us. How many people in our society know that the Earth goes around the sun, not the other way around, mm-hmm. and how many days it takes to do that. Such general knowledge information is really a telltale of the level of science literacy that we have in our society. And that should not only inform us, but spur us to see to it that changes in the school system, changes in our public education and private education system attends to these issues. And that's what it takes. Responsibility on the part of the citizen, you and I and Larry and mm-hmm. others in the listening audience, to say, look, these are alarming telltales. Or these are good telltales, depending what you're looking at. And let's see how we can do something about them. So I ask you not to lose hope, but to be focused on two or three things that can be done by you with your instigation, with your follow-up, to bring about some of these changes. Yes, it is deplorable that there are so many people in the United States that don't have basic knowledge about the world that we live in. But you know what? It's not their fault. It's our fault, because we have the knowledge and we have to share this knowledge. And that's what school systems, to a large extent, are all about. But that's what parental guidance is also about. And that's what the whole community responsibility is all about.
And Bassam, I want to thank you very much, Peter, for your call. Appreciate it. And as we conclude today, I want to remind everybody that it's your 40th anniversary of your Christmas lecture, which involves usually lots of color and some sound exploding things, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Once Upon a Christmas Cheery in the Lab of Shaka Sheery, December 5th and 6th, live in Madison, Wisconsin. We have some free tickets left. Go to the website, siphon.org, and make your request. The rest of you will have to enjoy it on television.
Thanks, Bassam. Bassam Shaka Sheery is the UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry and William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA. He directs Wisconsin's Initiative for Science Literacy, and it's always fun to have him with us. And not only will you be able to get tickets to his Christmas lecture on December 5th and 6th, if you go to scifund.org. But he has a lot of other great information on that website, experiments that you can run with your children or grandchildren, and a lot of other great information. He usually posts comments after every program and with some responses to some of the comments. So take a look at his website, www.scifund.org. Bassam Shaka Sheery. Coming up, we're going to be taking a look at amateur or ham radio. Steve Johnson, our own Steve Johnson from Wisconsin Public Radio, who's a ham guy. He's a hammy guy. He's going to be with us to talk about ham radio, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.